I think this is this kind of like virtuous cycle that we're trying to build, where it is like, you show up, you bring your good intentions, you bring your good values, you be based, you build cool shit, and then you get rewarded. You get rewarded with visibility, you get rewarded with distribution, you get rewarded with usability, you get rewarded with... And I think if we can just make that feedback loop work, it's unstoppable. This thing's going to be massive. And it's, and really what it's going to be is we're going to build the largest economy that the world has ever seen.
GM Alejandro, we are back on the NFT Now podcast. How you doing, man?
Buenas tardes, Matthew. Yo estoy super bien hoy. Gracias por preguntarme. But without further ado, today's an exciting day. We got somebody really special on the podcast. You know, somebody who's put on-chain anything and everything on the forefront, you know, and thanks to him, we have also been able to launch Sovereignty, you know, our on-chain media platform that helps digital publishers with creating proof of provenance. If you haven't already guessed, Matt, who do we have on today?
Yo, today's guest is none other than Jesse Polak, the creator of Base, Coinbase's L2 that was incubated in-house. And he's been leading, like you said, all of their on-chain initiatives, like in bringing the Base ecosystem to the forefront. It's been amazing to see the energy there from the builder community, from the artist community, and beyond. So I'm really excited about this conversation. Anything that stands out to you, Ale?
No, man, I'm just so many questions, right? Like, why Coinbase? Why launch an L2? Like, you know, the questions are going to be so crazy. I don't even want to get started because I just want to leave them for the episode, my man.
Awesome. Well, before we jump in, if you haven't already, we encourage you to sign up for our newsletter at nftnow.com/newsletter. Each week, we take all the action and all the mayhem happening in Web3 and distill it into actionable insights straight to your inbox, free of charge. Well, without any further ado, Jesse Polak. Jesse Polak on the NFT Now podcast. Welcome, man. How's it going?
Going good. Happy Friday. Glad to be here.
Yeah, glad happy to have Friday. You too. Yeah, man. It's been a long time coming. And one of the things that I love about you, Jesse, is that not only are you a technology builder, but you're also a community builder. Like, you're consistently putting others on. And just for our context and listeners, Jesse and I first met when you were launching Base at FWB. At the fest, you know, that like using Starlink, was it? I don't know. It was like some crazy story, right. You know what I mean? like, tell us a little bit about your role at Coinbase, and then like, let's just get onto on-chain, right? Like, let's talk about Base. Let's talk on-chain stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in the Coinbase orbit for seven and change years. I joined through an acquisition of a company I started. Joined as an engineer, spent 5 years kind of scaling up the consumer business on the engineering side, taking on kind of more and more responsibility until I was responsible for the whole thing, like a few hundred engineers. And then middle of 2021, decided I wanted to kind of get back to the metal and start building startups again. And actually thought I was going to leave, but decided to stay and figure out how to kind of combine that startup energy with the intent of bringing Coinbase on chain and using my kind of trust and knowledge and context from there. And, you know, after a bunch of wandering in the desert and chewing glass, out came Base the kind of beginning of last year. And we launched Mainnet in August. You know, we're about 8 months later now, and I'd say Base is the largest L2 by most metrics today. And so been pretty incredible start to this journey, although it's still very much day one for us. And my role day to day is, you know, leading Base in whatever way I can. And sometimes that's writing code. Sometimes that's, you know, supporting my team. Sometimes that's just being on Twitter and Farcaster and helping people get Base and build cool things and share what they're doing. And so, you know, doing a ton of things all the time. But really, my North Star is, you know, how do I get more people building on chain? How do I get more people starting to use these incredible products that we're building?
I love that. Tell us a little bit about what it's like, you know, running Base, which feels like it has like this startup energy, right? It feels like it's got this kind of insurgent feel, but it's also within a much larger, obviously, you know, major crypto company in Coinbase, you know, publicly traded, all that. So what is that like?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty awesome. And I'd say it's been a journey. You know, the first year and a half of trying to figure out what we were going to build we had similar startup energy, but we didn't actually know what we were doing. And so there was a lot of like trying and failing in the public eye internally. I had to like go and talk to our chief product officer and Brian, CEO, being like, we don't know what we're doing, and do that like every week or 2 weeks for a year. And that was really, really challenging. But I think one of the things I really give credit to Brian and the company and the rest of the exec team for is they just gave me and the team the space to do that. Like they weren't like, oh, there's a timeline. Oh, you have to figure this out. You have to generate revenue. They were like, you just keep iterating, like keep trying things and you'll get there, and kind of backed us at every point. And then I think what that's evolved into today is a similar trusting relationship and a similar level of autonomy, but obviously a much clearer execution mandate. We now have an incredibly clear mission, incredibly clear vision, incredibly clear strategy. We have, you know, metrics that we're driving week over week growth on, and you know, kind of able to report out in a way that the rest of the business can understands. But we're given a massive amount of autonomy, and so the base team, you know, really runs as an independent effort inside of Coinbase. I lead it kind of across, you know, all different functions. Given a ton of trust by the executive team. And I think it's an awesome context for us to be building because it really does feel like a startup, but then it's a startup with superpower, which is that we A, get to collaborate really closely with a bunch of other people at Coinbase and kind of help them transition on chain. And then B, you know, as we start to kind of get that traction, that product market fit, we start to find the things that really work, we can tap into Coinbase resources and say, hey, this is really working. Like now let's scale it. And there's a lot of kind of expertise that kind of comes from being a 4,000 person, you know, really rigorous public company, I think lets us operate at a really, really efficient and scalable way.
That's really awesome, man. I like, and I there's sort of, as mutual founders here, because you're a former founder, I have to ask you, like, hey, what was the aha moment where you're like an L2 for Coinbase? Like, oh my God, we need a chain. And like, tell us about like the story, pitching it to Brian. Like, Brian, hear me out. Hear me out. What was it like? Yo, hear me out, Brian. I got it. Like,
yes. I mean, on the kind of like how we got to that, we'd been building products, trying to build products on chain that we thought would kind of help bring Coinbase on chain for about a year. And I think every single time we were trying to build a product, we ran into the same challenges, which is like, where do we build this and how do we build this? And so we'd actually already been going through this process of figuring out where would we build by default. We were talking to all the L2s. We talked to a bunch of L1s. We kind of zeroed in on, we definitely want to build on EVM. We definitely want to build on Ethereum. We definitely want to build on L2. And we spent 6 months kind of evaluating what all the different options were. And I think as we got through those evaluations and also as we kind of iterated through some of the product stuff and didn't find the traction we were looking for and still felt really frustrated with the tooling, I think it kind of gradually dawned on us that it was like, oh, like, we are struggling because we don't have a great platform. And if we're struggling and we don't have a great platform, like no one else in the company is going to be able to do anything. And so that, I think kind of in November 2022 or so, me and a couple other people on the team basically said, we should just give this a shot. And so in about a week, we launched something called BaseNet, which was, we didn't even know we were building a full L2 at that point, but we launched an internal testnet that was like an internal testnet L2, so people could start experimenting with building more on chain. And engineers just started using it and like reaching out to us and talking about it. And I think that was kind of the spark where I was like, oh, whoa, like this is just a testnet, but people want it and they're using it and they're excited about it. What if we actually turn this into a real thing? What if instead of it just being a platform for Coinbase, it could be a platform for everyone? And then from there, it was kind of off to the races. And then on Brian and pitch, I mean, at this point, we've gone through four other ideas. And we've gone through four other ideas.
What was the notable failures? What were the notable failures? Yeah, you got to talk about these.
What's left on like the cutting room floor, you know?
The first one was like late 2021, peak bull market. I brought a like proposal to our exec team that was, give me $1 billion and 60 employees and I'll turn Coinbase into a DAO. And they were like, no.
Nice try, though.
They were like, good try. Like, try again. Second one, I can't talk about. The third one, we were basically like wanted to build kind of like an ads marketplace on chain. Some of the stuff that now I think is emerging with like quests on chain, yeah. You're starting to see in Frames. We spent some time building that. It was really focused on ads. Then after the ads one, we were like, before we can get to ads, we actually need to build like an app store so you can like register all the different apps that could do ads. And so we spent a bunch of time building that. And then when we built that, we were like, oh, in order to have an app store, we need to have an identity. And so we actually spent a bunch of time building identity on chain. And that's what led to like CV.ID and some of the stuff that's now live with Coinbase verifications. I mean, each of those I still think are very good ideas. And we're actually like the rest of the company is now in the process of building back up. But it kind of felt like this thing where we started with this really high level concept of like build on chain and bring Coinbase on chain. And then we were like, maybe it's by doing ads. Oh, no, in order to do ads, we need a marketplace. Oh, in order to do a marketplace, we need an identity. Oh, in order to do an identity, we need a platform. And then we built the platform and then we kind of worked our way. We were now working our way all the way back up. So it was very much a feeling of like, we knew from the beginning what we were building in our heart, but we didn't know what it actually was. And it took us a year to get that like vision and mission alignment to like a real product that we felt could actually be successful. And, you know, in terms of like how it actually went down, you know, funnily enough, like in late July, August, 2022, after we'd been through four iterations, they actually kind of like shut down the team. It was a little too big. It was like 10, 11 people. And me and my bosses at the time, Max Brandsburg, who now runs consumer products and was my partner for a long time, and Will Robinson, we kind of jointly made a decision of like, we need to change this. Like, it's not working with the current team. And so we shifted most people into another part of the business. We kind of freed up me and a few people to go and figure out how to make an impact somewhere else in the company. And that kind of like pressure release was then the like space that I think we needed in order to come up with like this next final idea that became Base. And then we brought it, we built this BaseNet thing. We internally, me and like the three people who were working on it, kind of convinced ourselves we wanted to do this. And then we went to DevCon in kind of November 2022. And it was my first time ever going to DevCon. And my goal for that DevCon was like, I think we want to do this, but like, let's go and validate that this is actually a good idea and that like people wouldn't have a negative reaction to it and that our like theses are correct. And so I wrote a big doc that was like, here's what we need to know. Here's what we need to believe. Went to DevCon, talked to tons of people, was honestly just so blown away with DevCon and like the whole thing of all these builders coming from around the world. It built a ton more conviction in me that we were on the right path. Came back from DevCon and pitched Will, who at the time was running the developer product group, and Brian, and it was like, hey, I don't need anything else other than the three people I have, but I'm going to build an L2. Like, now's your time to tell me no. And they were both like, great, go for it. And then we were off to the races.
That's an incredible story, man. I love that the spirit of entrepreneurship is still very much alive at a 4,000 person publicly traded company. You mentioned earlier that there's been moments of chewing glass and deserts, you know. A lot of people in crypto have gone through a lot of winters. You know, we've gone through our own chewing glasses. Like, and, you know, Jess, you have an incredible persona online. You've been super helpful, very empathetic. You're always looking to help people, you know, and you very rarely ask for help, right? And so just to kind of bring it into a more personal narrative here, like, what was that period like of chewing glass and deserts, and like what got you through that, right? Because it's so easy as a founder, you could be like, yo, I'm getting the fuck out of here, you know what I mean? Like, say, like, you know, like, I can go build something on my own, I can go raise money, whatever it is. What was that journey like?
It was very challenging. Like, from the time I decided to come back, so I was going to leave to start something, and my boss at the time, when I told him I was going to leave, Manish Gupta, who now runs, like, the platform part of Coinbase's business, he was like, Jesse, don't leave. Like, you need to take some time before you make a decision. And so I took 3 months off. And I think I had this kind of feeling of, like, having been at Coinbase for 5 years and have all this trust and knowledge and experience and know-how, and also being so entrepreneurial and having that startup energy, there's a unique confluence there that's very, very rare. And if I can figure out how to like take advantage of that, I can do something incredible. that was my intent. It's like, there's some combination here that only I have. And I really feel like there's an opportunity. And so then it was kind of just like steeling myself for what was ahead. And I didn't think it was going to be as hard as it was. But that year, really the next 2 years, that first year where we were trying to figure out what we were doing, was incredibly, incredibly painful because I felt like I was just constantly failing. And I not only was I like constantly failing, I was having to go and like explain to our like exec team, like, I'm constantly failing.
Were there any fears of getting fired or anything like that?
Fears of getting fired, fears of them, you know, shutting things down, fears of everyone losing confidence in me, like fears of being forced into doing a role that I didn't want to do because I was failing so much. Like, I was that year I was so anxious, just like all the time, that I wasn't ever gonna be able to figure it out. I actually think it was probably much harder than the first time I had started the company, because the first time I started a company, we'd like had an idea and we just started building it. And I think we probably built it for too long, but we were always building something. And in this one, we were also building something, because that was kind of the approach we took to it, is like iterative. But there was a lot of like Sunday nights where I knew I had to go to the team on Monday and tell them what we were doing this week. And I just had no idea. I was just making it up, trying to like figure out what the frick are we doing. So that was really challenging. And then I'd say the next year was really challenging as well. Like, once we decided to launch Base, when we started, we didn't really know what people's response was going to be. And I think we were really excited about the response that people gave us kind of at the test net. But still, I felt so much pressure throughout 2023 to get it right when we launched it, because like one of the things about these networks is that they're really multi-sided markets. And I had this feeling, this intuition of like, if we could get the flywheel going, it would be so, so powerful. But the moment at the beginning where like the culture was incepted and the first builders were kind of like brought in, and the first like moments of this flywheel were so important. And so throughout all of 2023, I feel like I held that in my chest, where I was just like constantly trying to perfect and dial and like get everything perfect.
What kept you sane? What kept you sane through this?
Nothing,
dude.
Nothing. I was not sane. I mean, like, really. And I don't actually think I've shared this publicly, but like, in On-Chain Summer, I mean, On-Chain Summer was this incredible moment, but like about midway through On-Chain Summer, I probably worked like 60, 70 days straight at that point. Like our team had gone into like basically a full lockdown at the beginning of June, and everyone just worked straight through the end of On-Chain Summer. But middle of On-Chain Summer, maybe like August, like 20th or so, my family kind of like had an intervention for me. It was like, hey, like, you're not okay. Like, I hadn't really been eating. I was super nauseous all the time because I was so anxious. I was feeling so much pressure. And my wife, bless her, and my parents, they kind of sat me down and were like, hey, we know you're doing a big thing. We know this is really important to you. And like, you're not taking care of yourself. And this is not sustainable. And it's not going to work for you to keep doing this. And that was really a wake-up call for me. And I made a bunch of, you know, in August and September, you know, we kind of got through On-Chain Summer. We got into September. I made a bunch of lifestyle changes. The weight of the first moment kind of got lifted off me alongside those lifestyle changes. And it's now whatever, 8 months later, and I'm in such a better place emotionally and mentally and personally. And huge shout out to my family for supporting me through that. But it was definitely a lesson for me, like, you know, throughout On-Chain Summer, I think if you ask the average person, like, how's Jesse doing? They would have been like, oh, he's so happy. He's so excited. And I was happy. Sure. I was excited. And there was like the internal part of me that was really, really struggling because of how much pressure I was feeling and, just like what my experience was of that moment.
Yeah, it's amazing now to look at. I mean, the Base ecosystem is flourishing, right? And there's so much energy and excitement there. You see it on Farcaster, you see it in the artist community, all that. What do you attribute like that breakthrough moment to? Like when, you know, like, as you talked a little bit about how things started to like get better, but like what was the breakthrough, do you think, in terms of like really kind of like inciting that spark?
Yeah. I mean, I think on-chain summer was kind of like when we lit the fuse a little bit. Like it was a, or not even lit the fuse, like that let us get a foot in the door, maybe is the right way to put it. It's like on-chain summer like created a bunch of energy and people saw, oh, there's like something here that's different, that's like cultural and relevant and like consumery and fun. And we saw a big spike of energy in on-chain summer and activity and all of our metrics. But then in September, the team was so tired and it just like we did a launch and we kind of did the like trough of sorrow. And so kind of all through fall, our metrics kind of went down and then they basically started flatlining. And so like we weren't really growing on the builder side. We weren't really growing on the user side. And then I think there are really two big inflection points that happened in the first quarter of this year. The first was in about the middle of January. I was just at an event and I opened up my phone and I was on Farcaster and I saw that they launched Frames. And for those who don't know, Frames are kind of these like mini apps that anyone can build in the Farcaster feed. And so now you can be scrolling your feed and you can do anything. You can mint something, you can buy something. And it's all built on chain. It can be built on any chain. But I think the second I saw that, I felt like, oh, this isn't the inflection point of the industry, because this is a new distribution channel for these apps that people are building on chain. Mm-hmm. And so I messaged my team right away. I was like, hey, everyone, like this thing just launched and we need to pivot our focus. And we need to launch a grants program by the end of the day. We need to start sponsoring hackathons. We need to write tutorials. We need to build developer tools. And the team worked that weekend. They worked all the next week. They worked next week and they worked all the week after that. They worked next weekend. And
I remember all the pizza boxes you sent out. I remember all the pizza boxes.
We sent
bro.
Pizza, you guys sent to pizza like, boxes you know, everywhere. 40, 50 different hackathons all around the world. And I think that was really this inflection point where we saw a thing that we thought was going to be really important and we jumped in on it and it ended up being really important. And now if you look at the like market share data, like 75% of all of the activity happening on Farcaster through Frames is happening on Base. And it was because we invested a lot of energy, resources, in making that really easy for builders. So I think that was the first inflection point. And if you look at our like builder metrics, active builder metrics, which is our North Star and the thing that we think is kind of leading of everything else, you kind of see it flat and then you hit that moment and we start going up. It not like that, but it's like it, now we're growing a little bit. And then the second inflection point was March 14th, which was the day EIP 4844 went live, which was an upgrade to Ethereum that we'd worked on for 2 years, like literally 2 years ago before we were building Base. Me and a few other people on my team got together with the Optimism team and Ethereum core developers and started building this upgrade to Ethereum that would lower fees on L2s. We worked on it for 2 years. We did all the prototypes. I led the meetings. I took notes. I went to the core devs retreat. And we got ready so that by when it went live on Ethereum, Base was ready right then. And we had this like evening that I will never forget where 4844 launched, Base added support for 4844, and like the fees dropped from like average of like 70 cents to like a tenth of a cent. And the internet just went crazy. I mean, literally, like my Twitter feed was just...
Yeah, we were so excited about that, you know?
Like, everyone went crazy. And, you know, it happened across all the L2s, but there's something about, like, the way we did our go-to-market around it and the work that we've been doing on it and our timing and the energy that, like, that just lit a whole other, like, fuel under the... Like, put more fuel under this fire. And that was when... Like what had been a like linear growth after the Farcaster Frame stuff, we went vertical. And if you look at our active like builder growth, it's literally just like shooting through the sky. Now it bases, we're not past Ethereum, but in terms of like L2s or Polygon, like Base is far and away the most active builders of any chain. And that's because it's gone totally vertical over the last month and a half since 4844 happened. And so I'd say those were really two big inflection points that happened just in the last few months that feel like they kind of cemented what was the beginning of that trajectory in on-chain summer.
That makes
but
sense.
I think the thing that's crazy for me is, you know, crypto is very much a momentum. It's a momentum game. And I feel like Base has kind of had these repeated moments that have driven more momentum. But when I look at the next like 4 months,
5 months, 6 months,
there are so many more things coming. Like, it's almost unbelievable to me. Like, we've been working with Coinbase on this smart wallet thing that they're launching soon. And that's going to totally change the game for how people use crypto. On-chain summer 2, we've been working on it. We have a lot more to share in the next few weeks. Like, that's going to be freaking massive, like 10x, 100x bigger than last summer. There's a ton of other things I can't talk about that I also know are coming. And so all of these inflection points are kind of like one more channel or one more kind of force that will bring more people, more builders, more users into the Base ecosystem and spin that flywheel faster and faster. And so I think that, you know, we are still at day one, but we are starting to accelerate. And I think that the inflection point for kind of global crypto adoption has been passed. And now it's just about like, how do we execute faster and faster and reach more and more people so we can get the world on chain as fast as possible over the next few years?
Yeah. No, I love that. And that's, you know, I think inspiring to hear for a lot of people who are kind of going through the, you know, the troughs and the glass and all of that. I want to talk a little bit more about Farcaster, because it does really feel like the Farcaster community and that platform has been really integral. Like you said, it was this big inflection point in kind of building out that Base ecosystem. Obviously, the rise of DeGen token on Base, that builder community. What do you think it is about Farcaster, that platform, that community that you know, has kind of played that has helped it play that role? And, and what are you kind of looking towards the future in terms of Base's integration with that platform?
Yeah. I mean, I think Farcaster is really like the first real on-chain native social community platform, where it's like you have people coming together who are builders who get it. And I think one of the things Base, like one of the reasons why Base has benefited from that is because we've been there from day one. You know, I was like, I have FID number 99. I've known Varun and Dan since we worked together for years at Coinbase. And so I've been on Farcaster, posting on Farcaster for years at this point. And when the second they started having, like, allowing brands, because originally they didn't let brands on, I was like hounding Dan. I was like, when can we get like a Base account? When can we get a Base account? When they started letting brands on, we got a Base account. When they started doing channels, I was one of the first people to be like, I told my team, like, we're going to focus our go-to-market on Farcaster and the Base channel. And now, I mean, I wonder if we cross it today. The Base channel today has 199,000 followers. We're going to cross 200,000 today. And so it's like, it's our heartbeat for our ecosystem. And it's an on-chain native heartbeat. And so when people are posting things in there, they're able to do things on-chain on Base. Those things are getting viral distribution through this social network, and then that's driving this feedback loop of the people who are posting are getting their things minted, they're getting their swag bought, and that's encouraging them to build more, post more, and again, the flywheel's going. And so I really think that, like, if you look at the history of consumer products and like growth of consumer products, the norm is that you get viral social products and those things grow really, really fast. But in crypto, we've never really had viral social consumer products except for speculation, which has been this very like cyclical bubble thing. But I think Farcaster is going to be one of the first products, although among many, like, yeah, I think Zora will see some of that and others will see as well, where you're actually just going to have like consumer growth, where it's like it gets viral and it just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing and growing until everyone's using it. And I think Base has basically just been invested in that from the beginning because we believe in on-chain and because our team from the beginning has said everything we're going to do is going to be on-chain first. Because yes, all the other platforms have distribution, but being on-chain first is going to signal that we give a shit and that we're serious and that we're builders and that we are like all of these other people who we want to be building with us.
All right. Now let's talk about a little bit of you keep using the word on-chain, right?
Yep.
Where did it come from? Because like everybody's like NFTs, you know, tokenized, like there's been Web3, there were so many different iterations.
Is there a hyphen between the on and the chain? No hyphen.
It feels like you and your team are incredibly intentional. So this wasn't a draw in the hat, or was it?
I wouldn't say it was a draw in the hat, but like it also wasn't like a psyop or anything like that. You know, I've been in crypto for a decade at this point. And so when I started working on crypto, it was just Bitcoin. And I've seen all of the iterations of like Bitcoin, that we had blockchain, that we had crypto, that we had Web3. And I think that like none of those words have really satisfied me. And I try and explain all the time when I'm doing to people, like, you know, I talk to every Uber driver and even like... It's constant struggle trying to figure out how to explain what we're doing. And I think as I started kind of working on this new mandate in late 2021, I was really trying to figure out, like, how do I talk about what this thing is that I'm doing? Like, how do I talk about moving Coinbase from this centralized custodial world into this new world that's powered by smart contracts, that's happening on these, you know, open networks? And at about the same time, you know, credit to Jacob Horn and Dee at Zora, they coined this term on chain. And literally the first time I heard it, I was like, that's it. That's it. And I think there's so many great things about the word. It is simple. It has this really great analogy to online. It is a platform word. So you can say, I built something on chain. And that is conveys that you built out a new technology platform, just like you built something online. It's not about money. It's not about speculation. And so the second I kind of heard that from them, I was like, oh yeah, this is it. Like, this is the word that I think will work. And we started experimenting with it in our comms, in the video that we launched, where we said on-chain is the next online. I think that was like a big moment for the testnet release for the word. And then we've just been a like consistent champion of it. And what we've seen as we've talked to people is that it performs better than any other word we have to describe what we're doing consistently across Coinbase, across Base. People get it faster. They feel more comfortable with it. They're not scared by it. They understand that's a technology thing, not a money thing. And they're excited to use it and share it with their friends. And so I think, like, we believe that everyone's going to be using on-chain in the years ahead, and that it'll kind of be like the internet, where we'll talk about on-chain media and on-chain, you know, books and on-chain commerce and on-chain games. And that will exist for another 5-10 years, and then it will just be games and books. And it'll all just exist in this new on-chain platform, in this new global on-chain economy that we've built. And that will be our existence. But I think right now we need to kind of pull it forward by telling people and explaining, this is what this thing is, and this is what the benefits of it are.
That's amazing. So, like, I really love that emphasis on on-chain and that metaphor, that likeness to online. So the continuing education for you guys is very prominent. So let's talk about on-chain summer V2. Let's do some forward-looking stuff.
I'm here for
it. You know what I mean? Like, are we going to, like, what are we expecting this time around? Is it going to be longer? Is it going to be shorter? Like, what are we getting into?
Yeah, well, I can't get into all the details because we have some news coming soon. But I'll say, like, I think it's going to be 10 to 100 times bigger, if not bigger, way more people. I mean, last on-chain summer, like, it was before Base launched. We had to go and, like, beg and plead people to participate. Like, literally, I spent, like, hours and hours and hours being like, will you please build on Base and do something in the summer? This summer, everyone wants to do something on-chain, and they all want to do something in collaboration with us. And so we're trying to figure out, how do we scale that? How do we get all of these incredible things that people are doing in front of, you know, as many people as we possibly can? How do we make sure it's done in a decentralized way that's open, that anyone can participate in? And how do we make it feel exciting and energizing the whole summer? Because last summer we were really in August. It was like August 9th through the end of August, which was great. And we learned a lot, and it was both very, very intense for that period, especially for like me and the team, because we were just like grinding so hard. But it also felt like it was kind of like compressing the summer. And so this summer it's more like, how do we make it the whole summer? How do we bring more people in? How do we still bring a lot of that energy and intensity, but also do it in a way that, like, we can do from June to the end of August that feels sustainable and healthy and something that people want to be a part of? So we'll be sharing a lot more in the weeks ahead. And I'm really excited. And I guess my only call to action is, if you're a builder and you're thinking about what you're doing for the next couple quarters, we'd encourage you to do something cool on chain this summer. There will be awesome ways for you to get access to more distribution and people, for you to be a part of the narrative, for you to have a lot of fun in the context of On-Chain Summer. And we're excited to get to build with you. So get thinking and get building.
Boom. Well, speaking of doing cool things on chain, one of the things that's been really cool to see, especially, you know, with Now Media, with NFT Now, we've always been about empowering artists. We've been deeply connected to the artist community in the NFT space. It's been so cool to see all of the on-chain art initiatives that have been happening from Optimism's, you know, We Heart the Art, you know, with everything Benji's doing over there, to the on-chain art mints that are being done on Base. You know, I know Xcopy kind of kicked that off with the really that really powerful, the flies, the mutatio, or I'm not sure how that's pronounced, but
yeah,
you know,
I tried to pronounce it really. I was like, mutatio,
you know, but like, but that was epic, right? Like, you know, that was really epic. Millions of mints, right? And like, and then Jack Butcher and, you know, some other amazing artists. I saw John Carroll like recently. And like, there's just, it's really cool to see just like really top tier artists releasing in really affordable, accessible, like high, like editions like that. Love to hear a bit about, you know, like what the vision is there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I literally just tweeted this morning or casted this morning, the level of on-chain creativity happening on Base over the last few weeks has surpassed my wildest expectations. And it really has. Like, literally every time I open up my social feed, I see something new that someone's dropped on Base that blows my mind. And I'm like, what? Like, this is, like, the other day someone dropped, like, all these hand-drawn cards of, like, different people in the Base ecosystem that were beautiful and, like, man, there's so many cool things happening. I mean, my story and like my kind of thinking on what's happening is you had all this incredible creativity on L1, but it was super expensive. And so like if you wanted to create art, it cost hundreds of dollars. And that meant that for all the people who were creative, only some small percentage of them actually had the money to do it. And then only a small percentage of people actually had the money to participate and engage with that. And now with Base, we've dramatically lowered those costs. I mean, I was talking to this guy, Billy, who dropped this thing called Kudzu today, which is like a virus that's an art project that spreads through Base. And he was like, yeah, the virus spread to 700 people on L1 when we did it in 2020, and it cost 11 ETH, which is like $45,000. And I did the math, and this time the virus could spread to 27 million people on Base for 11 ETH. 727 million. So just the aperture
stability
of who
there,
can
yeah.
now create and participate and like do these things has just dramatically increased. And I think what that is leading to is just this kind of Cambrian explosion of creativity. And I mean, people like, you know, when you study art history, you look at all these eras of art and you talk about postmodernism, and you know, Billy was talking about something like the post-internet art that was happening in the like 2014 and stuff, but like the era of on-chain art is here, and it is going to be talked about and like studied for years and decades. I mean, we're gonna have probably, I think, the most incredible creative explosion the world has ever seen, because you now have these platforms where anyone can create art. They can publish their art on chain. They can earn money from that art, which allows them to create more art. And they can design these new ways of doing art that are interactive, that are permanent, that are long-lived. And I don't think anyone is prepared for how much that's going to open up in terms of what's possible. So, yeah, I just feel lucky to be here, honestly, and get to be a part of it and get to watch and participate and create and consume and be one small part in this massive on-chain world that we're all building together.
Yeah, man. You know, that thing about building that world, we're part of that. You know, we're building sovereignty on-chain media. Like, I remember all last year, just to give you an anecdote, we had pretty much every major L2 like have a grant proposal on our table. And when I was at FWB Fest, I immediately texted our board of directors. I was like, do not vote on this. Like, I was like, do not vote on which one we're going to take. I think I found the one we need. Oh, and by the way, there's no grant involved. And by the way, there's no exclusivity. By the way, there's no guarantee this is actually going to work. But I just met the guy who launched it, and I'm going to tell you, like, he's got that spark in his eye. And Matt and Aaron, our CTO, they were like, yo, this better be freaking good, bro. Like, you know, because like when you have like three or four L2s giving you grants and things, right, like proposals for like exclusive building and capital and tokens, it makes sense. There is a business element to it, but then you kind of have to think about like the bigger picture. And look, we minted 69 articles on the mainnet because we were like, hey, we're going to do this on mainnet because we want to showcase that we're committed to being on-chain media. And it was like $100-$200 like on the cheap
impossible.
Days. By the way, on the cheap days, right? And like, I remember one article cost us like $600 to mint. And I was like, yo, we better get an ROI on this. But then on Base, it's like pennies on the dollar. It's like literally like pennies. And so now we're fully on chain media, like fully on chain. I think the only thing that's not on chain is some of our podcast episodes because of like the YouTube thing. And some people feel weird about being on chain. I don't know. It's whatever. But like, we try to do 99% of everything now moving forward is on chain. So thank you for building this ecosystem, man.
Yeah, well, and thank you for believing in us. And I think that, I've had so many conversations.
I remember bugging you, and thank you for my patience, because I was like, yo, Jesse, on Telegram, like, consistently, like, I didn't even know what craziness you were going through, you know? I was like...
Yeah, well, I appreciate you leaning in. And I've had so many conversations with builders over the last, many years of building Base, and I'd say there is always these kind of decisions that people are making, and oftentimes they're making decisions between like, do I take a short term, payment, or do I build for the long term and have to like take a leap of faith? And I think that that's a decision that a lot of people have been presented with on Base, because our ethos kind of from the beginning has been like, build and you will be rewarded. It's like build first, build more, talk less. And I think what we're seeing is that what that is creating is it's creating this culture and creating this ecosystem where you have all of these aligned people who have a similar ethos and who are building and that are being rewarded. And it's not like that reward is just, growth, or it's just energy. It's also money. Like if you look at the last 6 months, people who've built on Base have earned something like $50 million in rewards through airdrops and Optimism Retroactive Public Goods Fund. Like that's real money. That, maybe is even more than they might have gotten if they'd committed to something up front. And so I think this is this kind of like virtuous cycle that we're trying to build, where it is like, you show up, you bring your good intentions, you bring your good values, you be based, you build cool shit, and then you get rewarded. You get rewarded with visibility, you get rewarded with distribution, you get rewarded with usability, you get rewarded with money. And I think if we can just make that feedback loop work, it's unstoppable. This thing's going to be massive. And really what it's going to be is we're going to build the largest economy that the world has ever seen.
It's
going to be a global economy. It's going to be open to anyone. Everyone will be on the level playing field. And it's going to massively increase innovation, creativity, and freedom. And so,
ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here.
If you want to be a part of that, come build with us. Come build with us on Base. Come build with Sovereignty and NFT Now and be a part of this crazy thing that we're all building together.
Let me ask you a question on that front of this economy, because like, why did you guys choose Optimism? What was that process like?
Yeah. So Optimism, we went through a lot of thinking about this, and I'd say there were a bunch of things that brought us to Optimism, but the biggest thing that I think drew us in was that when we thought about where we wanted to build this economy and who we wanted to build this economy with and what the values of decentralization and public goods and open source were that we really cared about, Optimism just felt like a natural fit. And the work that they'd been doing on decentralization and governance was so cutting edge. It felt like that was the right context for us to be investing in building it. And so that alignment, I think people now are seeing it more and more when we're talking about the super chain, we're talking about the super team and all these teams that are coming together from across the ecosystem to build something really incredible. I think that was kind of the insight that we had early on. And I feel like it's really playing out.
All right, Jesse, one last thing. Speaking of being based, I got to ask about Base meme coins. I got to ask about the meme coins because it's popping off. There's crazy communities being built, tons of energy, and I know that you've been really supportive as well. You've been popping into the meme coin telegrams. You've been encouraging the team. You've been like embracing it. And I love to see that. So tell us just a little bit about the meme coin ecosystem on Base and like what you see as like that, like these liquid cultural like capital markets.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just call them memes because that's what they are. Like, these are just cultural memes that people have created, and they're using a token as a distribution mechanism for getting people to experience and engage with the meme. And I think that people, like, from the outside look at them, and I felt this way too. Like, I was like, these are just, like, silly. These are just people shilling. This is a waste of time. you know, it's just people, you know, pumping and dumping, whatever. But I think once you actually get into it, what you see is that literally there are tens and hundreds and potentially of thousands and potentially millions of people all around the world who are creating things with these memes. They're creating art, they're creating music, they're creating community. They're literally creating with around the concept of a meme. And in any economy, you need these cultural movements because it's what brings people together, it's what brings people in, whether you're talking about religious movements or sports movements or, you know, corporate movements. Like, those moments and those rallying cries that get people fired up are so, so important. And I think what we're seeing happen on chain on base with all these memes is exactly that. You now have hundreds of different memes, hundreds of different cultures, hundreds of different sub-communities who all are trying to onboard as many people as possible on-chain. Like, that's literally all they think about. They're like, how do we get more people on-chain to engage with our meme? And so for me, I'm like, you're talking my language. Like, I gotta get a billion people on-chain. And now there's hundreds of y'all, thousands of y'all, millions of y'all who are just going out there and are doing art and telling stories just to get people on chain. That is what it's all about. And so I love that energy. They're builders. They're positive. Of course, there are bad actors, and we got to call out those bad actors and build tools to protect people against them. But for the most part, there's just a lot of love and a lot of positivity and a lot of base energy, and I'm going to keep supporting that.
Bring in the world on chain, one meme at a time. Thank you, Jesse. Great chatting. And we will catch you again next time on the NFT podcast.
Thanks, guys. Happy Friday. See you later.
Thanks, Jesse.
Well, that did not disappoint. That was an amazing episode. One of my favorite ones in a while, actually. Ale, what stood out?
What didn't? I think this is one of the first episodes where I want to say the whole episode stood out. But you know me, I'm always diving into the personal side of things. As a coach, you know, as a spiritual person, I'm always very curious about the people's behind the scenes journeys to launch great things, you know. And I loved how real and how raw he was when he spoke about that he spent like a year or two navigating deserts and chewing glass at Coinbase, you know, and the fear of getting fired, or the fear of being downsized, or the fear of putting things on. Because Jesse's an incredibly positive and endearing person when it comes to the social presence. He's consistently helping people. He's consistently asking, how can I help? What can I give? What can I do? What you've never seen him ask for anything for himself. Right. And so when I heard that backstory, that really kind of humanized this element of this amazing builder that, you know, when we spoke off camera a little bit, everybody's got some shit to go through. You know what I mean? Like, that really stood out for me. And just his passion for on-chain, man, overall, like, you can tell that this is a lifelong conviction for him, that this is not just a job. This isn't just something that he does. Like, this is something that he lives and breathes and is willing to, quote unquote, as he said, navigate deserts and chew on glass to see things through.
Yeah, no, 100%. And, you know, one of the things that really I really appreciate about him is that he really gets the importance of culture. You know, like, it's really easy in like the traditional crypto space to neglect that. In fact, we saw it neglected for years and years. But it's amazing. And one of the reasons to see like how he's embraced that. And one of the reasons why I think Base has won is because they've really leaned into that, getting artists like Xcopy and Jack Butcher to mint on the platform, leaning into the Farcaster platform on chain social, getting like embracing the meme coins, you know, and actually like treating them like proper communities, which they are, many of them. And so it's like, it was really, really interesting. He gets it. He's got that finger on the pulse, and he brings that energy day in, day out, like always on the timeline. I'm like, I'm going through, I'm like, bro, like, you're like, and you're doing it on Farcaster too. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. But no, it's a great episode. And, you know, I think there's a lot of insights to be unpacked.
Absolutely, Matt. Couldn't agree more. And ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please remember to give us some 5 stars, leave your comments. This podcast would not be possible without those clicks, without those little stars. They go a long way. We live in a very big algorithmic world. And so those little comments, those little shares, those little stars, again, go a really long way. And but now that I have you here, sign up for our newsletter too. Did I mention? It's absolutely free. zero ETH, no base required, you know, just like get it up. It's always in your inbox once a week. It's written by Matt and the editorial team, and you get all the alpha, all the insights of everything that's happening in our community and in our industry in insightful, instilled insights. Thank you again, guys.
We'll see you next time on the NFT Now podcast.